CONCACAF referees red card. It's That So MLS with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Can you see that it's still dark out here?
Oh, wow.
You'll actually be able to see the sun come up over my shoulder, I feel.
I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed as the day breaks in Vancouver and as the clouds hang in Toronto.
Waking up to Andrew Bates.
So how was your week in soccer?
You know, my week in soccer was not the greatest, mostly because of Premier League things. And not the greatest because there's only four games on yesterday and there's no games on today. Mm. Also, I can't for the life of me understand how MLS Live considers a Chicago-Montreal game in-market in Vancouver, and so it's blacked out. Which I know it just means, like, it's on TSN here, but it would be really nice to, like, watch a Canadian team occasionally on MLS Live when they're not playing, like, Columbus or something.
The service has always been a... in the recent years, an afterthought, because I don't know where it's at now. But I remember being an MLS Live subscriber the year before ESPN started doing more of its own streaming stuff, and the year afterwards where they were like, we're going to keep running it in Canada because we have to, I guess.
Yeah, well, at least they let people know now a little clearer that you won't actually be able to watch your favorite home team play on MLS Live. Mm-hmm. Until it's 48 hours after the fact. Which, as a season's ticket holder, is okay, because it means that 2 days later I can watch the game with a cooler head and see all the things that I missed. I'm like, oh, yep, that's a penalty. That's a clear penalty. Sorry, referee, for those helpful reminders from behind the net.
Does the no replays rule apply to yourself after the game as well? Not just in the stadium, but you have to avoid inciting yourself?
It kind of does. I'll be honest, it changes the way I behave as a fan. I literally have to go, like, God, that's video review. I mean, it's going to be 2 days too late, but I got to go review that. Okay, so let's talk about these four matches here, because that's all we got. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Canadian men's national team. You've got some great audio with Alfonso Davies and Coach Zambrano. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that a little later, but let's talk about MLS first.
We taped too early last week to talk about Seattle and Portland and Montreal and Toronto.
Yeah, we did miss a couple of games last Sunday, so let's go back and look here. Oh, and we missed LA Galaxy and San Jose as well. So, for me, that was actually the more interesting of the matches. Because Hiro was talking, I think we both sort of said San Jose, we maybe spent 20 seconds talking about them and just kind of went, meh. And then they completely steamrolled LA Galaxy, which is maybe not surprising considering LA Galaxy's form, but just went in and really had a field day playing them. And I'm watching the match, it's actually surprising it was only 3-0 instead of something much harsher.
Mm-hmm. The start of a big week for Marco Urania.
Yeah. It was interesting. And then, I mean, I don't think we can talk about that match without talking about yesterday's match, in which Ziggy must have lit a fire under somebody, because LA comes out of the gates and storms the barn against Colorado. Which, okay, we're talking about some pretty bottom-level teams here right now in the table, but... You know, LA is not a bad team. We were both, everyone's been baffled by how, with not a ton of changes in their squad this year, they've just not been performing at all. And then all of a sudden yesterday, we really saw the potential there of what they can do on their night. Yes, they're playing against Colorado, which, I mean, I think we were giving them the benefit of the doubt last week, but I think it's fair to just say they're bad. They're really bad. There's very few redeeming qualities on that team right now. If you're the coach, I can only imagine your off-season strategy or your season strategy is like, let's just get this done with. You know, we're basically just practicing in our matches now. Mm-hmm. And we'll just get rid of every single player and start fresh.
I think that to give a little bit of credit, though, to bottom team sides playing each other, it's really easy for these games to those games to seem even more lackluster when you have two teams that don't have form going against each other. Because it was like Colorado DC from last month was like a 1-0 in that. I want to double check this before I say that, but I recall it being a 1-0 game with like an own goal. So they definitely don't have to be 3-goal thrillers. So credit there to LA at least for trying to start something that can maybe give them a little more energy coming down the stretch.
Absolutely. And you know, from last week to this week, a ton of teams that really didn't perform well really stepped up and had pretty stellar performances this week. So I think it kind of works both ways, where teams are now seeing the finish line, whether that finish line is the postseason or not, or the playoffs rather or not. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and teams are starting to go like, okay, we've got to do something about this. Our destiny is in our own hands.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about the two? I did get the chance to watch both rivalry games. I think that everybody, you could kind of hear the commentators in the Seattle game wishing for more.
Mm.
In terms of fireworks or fire in the game.
Yeah. I only saw the highlights of the Toronto-Montreal game. Toronto came out and Toronto'd the situation in a very Toronto way. There wasn't really any surprises there. I thought they played pretty well. Montreal had their points where they looked like, you know, they could get something out of it. But as with most teams playing Toronto this year, it's pretty evident early on. You know who's going to come out the other side. Which, as somebody who hasn't spent a lot of time watching Toronto games this year, I'm actually more impressed by their midfield and their defense, of just how solid they are, that, you know, they basically just, you know, they're playing like a Barcelona of just hold up the ball and just entirely controlling possession. And so you're huffing and puffing trying to win the ball back, and the ball's traveling all over the pitch. The team's got excellent movement, but they're moving the ball side to side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look threatening even before Giovinco goes on a run. So it's really not surprising that they're where they're at, and it's not surprising that they beat Montreal 3-1.
I think it sometimes is easy to overlook how good Michael Bradley is
at
just running the operation. Like,
yeah.
And that's not something that you always notice and be like, oh, what an amazing like engine running this is. You don't, it's not the same as a run at the goal, but.
No, for as much credit as he gets, I still don't think he gets enough, and he puts in the work that allows Giovinco to do what he does, not just by feeding him directly the ball, but he's distributing the ball, he's setting the pace for the rest of the team, and he's not the flashiest of midfielders, but what he does very, very well.
Yes. Now this weekend's games.
Okay.
Or what were you going to go to next?
I was just going to say Seattle-Portland, but...
Yes.
That was a bit of a snoozer, unfortunately. The big Cascadia derby ended up with not a lot on. Both teams came out with a point. I was satisfied. Disappointed that teams can't draw and get 0 points, but the fact that both bad guys came out with only a point was music to my ears. But they both teams looked a little tired, and like all the hype and everything leading up to it, and then it nobody really had too much on. I think for the most part Seattle looked like the better team, but Portland has just got so much speed on their side that they can counter, but I think they just kind of canceled each other out, and a 1-1 draw is fair, but
yeah,
not an exciting game.
No. I think that as you're saying, the draw is a good result in that it keeps the East relatively flat.
Mm-hmm.
Still only 5 points separating first from sixth. San Jose is now the team knocking at the door. Last week it was Real Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Which will happen when they have that, when you have that sort of result. And RSL, San Jose still have another game in hand on RSL.
Yes. However, their next game is against Toronto. So, considering their form, I feel like San Jose might just end up as one of those unlucky teams this year.
Is that a game in hand that just burns in your hand, like you have it, and then all of a sudden it melts away like a snowflake?
It could well be. Games in hand, I think, it was Carl Robinson said that before going to Orlando. It was like, the games in hand are great, but if you don't do anything with them, then they're completely meaningless. And I think that's a good approach to take with them. Mm-hmm.
Thinking of teams that are trying to get themselves some momentum heading into the stretch run.
Yeah.
New England beat Orlando 4-0?
Yeah, they did. So I feel like some of these teams must have listened to our podcast, because I think every team that we sort of scratched our heads at this week, the few that played, really put on a bit of a show. Now, Orlando, we know, has been struggling. But when you look at that lineup that comes out, you think, like, okay, that's a good team. Like, there's good players on the pitch. And from start to finish, New England completely ran the game. Of course, a 4-0 result, you would assume that. But as we know with MLS, things happen. But Orlando just looked completely bewildered. Like, it was like they were playing together for the first time. The unbelievable lack of team chemistry seems to be biting them more than lack of talent. You know, the few times they had the ball and started stringing together passes, you were like, okay, well, maybe there's something on here. But, you know, as soon as they lost possession, you'd sort of see the shoulders slump. And for that amount of talent on the field to just not be working is kind of baffling. And I don't know if you saw the highlights or watched the game, but New England just seemed to be totally tuned in.
Right.
I don't think there was a player on the pitch that didn't just show up, put in a really strong performance. And it's not just Orlando being terrible right now. It really was New England sort of switching on. And the players that we kind of talked about last week, Kofi had a great game. The Orlando commentator was sort of drooling over his work rate and distribution. I mean, he was defending in the box. He was threatening down at the other end. He was feeding passes to the wings, kind of doing everything that we know he can do when he's shows up. And a 4-0 result is they've got to be happy with that. And if they play like that against other teams, not just teams like Orlando that come in as sort of this wet towel, they could absolutely climb up and maybe make it into the playoffs. I don't think they're above the line right now, are they? They're
a few points below. They were in 10th, but this result has given them, parachuted them up to 8th, right behind Montreal. Mm-hmm. So they're on now, Montreal is in 7th, tied with 36 points.
Okay.
New England has the opportunity to put themselves in the conversation if they can beat Montreal and then get within a point of them.
Yeah.
They'll put themselves in the pack. The unfortunate part, I think, is that that game, I had this in front of me a second ago, but the game might be away. They might go away to Montreal, and they have not won a game yet.
Hmm.
Yes. So if they can win away, something they have not done all season, they will be able to put themselves in the conversation.
They do literally have the worst away record, I believe, even including Colorado. So, but you never, like, honestly, I was really impressed with the performance. And when we talk about teams not clicking and teams not having chemistry, they certainly showed on their day great team. And you wouldn't think they'd be dwelling so close to the bottom. But speaking of Montreal, the Chicago-Montreal game, what are your thoughts?
Yes. Well, more VAR fun. More fun with VAR.
I just watched the highlights, too.
Now, it does kind of... That tackle did look late, to be sure. And I feel like...
The one that took out Basti?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a tackle by their new signing. I had his name in front of me just a second ago. Holdor, which is great for the Game of Thrones fans out there.
Yeah. He did not hold the door.
No. He did get a piece of Bashi Schweinsteiger's shin, however.
He certainly did, and studs were up, but I don't know. Do you feel like the call was a little bit harsh? Do you feel like if it was against another player that it wouldn't have been a straight red?
That is a great point. I think that there is definitely... that's a factor. The fact that... I think that when you come in fast, it always looks bad.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it might look worse on video, too.
Yeah.
That, like, there just appears to be so much more... not malice, but, like, movement and, like, energy behind it that's like, wow, that looks so bad.
Yeah.
Because
I think the one thing you do see is judging by, what's his name? Holdor?
Deon Boldor.
Boldor. Boldor.
Boldor.
It's not actually Hodor. Boldor. His body language showing, like, he's going for the ball. Like, there's no malice in the attempt. Yes, he comes in fast. His studs are showing. You hear Bastion cry out. Like, you hear him scream when he makes contact. But judging by, you know, the fact that 30 seconds later he's up walking around and then he goes and scores the goal, you know, I think he was sort of more surprised by it than anything else. But I'd need to watch it a few thousand more times from all possible angles. But I do feel like it was a little harsh. And for me, kind of one of those things where I go, I don't get why you needed video review in that instance. I mean, it didn't clean him out entirely. He gave him a yellow. I'm still kind of uncertain about this clear and obvious error thing because it was in front of the referee. The referee saw it. He pulled a card out. So, you know, I know that the video assistant referee is chirping in their ear if they've missed something. But I don't... it's one of those tough ones where you kind of have to go like, the arguments for why it's a red all make sense, but if the referee gives a yellow, calls the foul, I'm not sure why we need to review it, especially when there's no clear like malice in the attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Schweinsteiger's fine. It wasn't denying a goal-scoring opportunity or anything, which I know is not the only reasons why you'd give a red, but... to me, it's kind of unfortunate, and then it changes the complexion of the game. Bastion loves to play the supervillain and comes in and scores the goal and then celebrates in front of the fans. And you just think like, okay, well, did he plan it that way? Like, was he going down that hard to, obviously, to draw the foul? But you even saw Boldor, you know, goes over and shakes the ref's hand when he comes back and gives him the red. And I think he just sort of feels like, well, okay, if it's a red, it's a red. But not
Baltimore Toledo choices.
Yeah, yeah.
The decision making sometimes doesn't make any sense. There was also another the first and only thing that I saw. I was out at the Canada game last night.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I saw, which I've just sent to you, is this GIF of Schweinsteiger sort of lightly brushing up against Hassoun Kamara in Kamara folding like a suitcase.
Oh, yeah, no, Kamara. There seems to be something about people with the last name Kamara where they really love hitting the deck, like across all the leagues.
You got to give K Kamara credit for his hat trick.
Yeah, yeah, well, and especially from yesterday's performance. That's true. But he's also been guilty of taking wee tumbles.
On the topic of VAR in its subjects, I don't think we have a great sample size yet, although as recent as it's been, I feel like there are many minutes now of footage of these VAR calls.
Mm-hmm.
I hope somebody is tallying up like when you know, star players versus non-star players. I do wonder if there's even an unconscious bias towards like, well, if somebody's brushing up against a designated player, we've got to give it a look.
Yeah, and we know that the league has that in their heads to protect those players. And I don't have a problem with that. You know, like, I think that you've got to protect your assets, and MLS is a league where, you know, they can't afford to have Schweinsteiger out for 6 months because he tears his ACL in a bad challenge. And you know, whatever, that's fine. And maybe it's a, a bit of a fan's reaction to to claim that. But it, yeah, at least in the early days of VAR, it seems a little bit suspicious that, yeah, I don't know. I'd love to see, like, the highlight reel of the number of times the calls go for the star. And, you know, and also credit to Schweinsteiger is, like, he's played at the highest level and he knows how to draw fouls, right? That's part of his game. That's part of something that makes him so effective is that, you know, he can win a red card for against the other team in certain situations. And this isn't the first time he's done it. I don't think that was his intention when he went down. But, you know, I think he did make a little bit of a meal of it.
He's the center of attention.
Yeah, the Bastion show.
Do you think from these two games, there was some Orlando City lost and was missing Kyle Lahren? I'm just thinking from the Canada side.
Yeah.
Montreal lost and was missing Anthony Jackson-Hamel in Samuel Piet. Do you think that it was... they were affected by the fact that they were taking place during the international break, or do you think it by this point, it strikes everyone equally?
It's a good question. I didn't see enough of the Montreal-Chicago game because I've only seen the highlights. The highlights I saw, I thought, yeah, you could probably use an Anthony Jackson-Hamel running at Chicago's defense, which overall this season's been pretty bulletproof, but they showed how shaky they can be at times, and it's not like Montreal didn't have chances, so... you know, another day, Piatti doesn't hit the post and, you know, they walk away with a point. Yeah, the missing two players, it might have helped. The red card, I still think, affected the game and what can you do? For Orlando, I think they could bring in Diego Costa, anyone, and it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference. They've just played so poorly together as a unit. When you have somebody like Will Johnson come onto the pitch, which I was a little surprised he was there. I didn't realize he hadn't been called up. And just be totally ineffective. And yeah, Will Johnson's one of those guys that he's been up and down and that's why he's bounced around to MLS. But he's a very serviceable midfielder and usually a guy when he's coming off the bench can come in and make some kind of difference. And he looked like someone had woken him up from a nap. And he just, you know... he looked like he just wanted to lie down on the pitch and just have it all be over, which is not what you want from your substitutes.
What's with the summer in Orlando?
The what?
Is it, what's with the summer in Orlando? Is it just like overheating players?
I don't know. I really, you know, I suspect if either of us had an answer, then Jason Kreis would be calling us right now. Because he looks out of ideas too, and he's got to be frustrated. I mean, he's not a bad coach. He's putting out a lineup he thinks he can win with. But I think I heard Kaká's name said maybe twice in that whole match that because they were so ineffective. And again, giving credit to New England. New England came in with a game plan, stuck to it, had quite a bit of possession. They had speed. They had... 8 or 9 clear chances, 4 of them they were able to put away. Kamara came out and, to me, should be, you know, the highlight player of the week because he also was clearing stuff off the line on his own end, doing the defensive work. I've never seen him defend, period, let alone put in a solid defensive shift, let alone score 3 goals. Like, I don't know what he had for breakfast yesterday, but it seemed to have worked, and he came out seemingly hell-bent on, like, okay, this is going to be our night, and was willing to do whatever it took to get there, which, you know, was positive for the whole team.
When you talk about the game plan, it makes me think of what we were saying about them being a quality team, yeah. And I think that they have benefited. I don't know if this was something they were considering. I think they've benefited from not, you know, having a quick release trigger and blowing up too much. Either before the trade deadline or in their coaching staff, because Jaheim St. Pepe, even if there is a even if they're sort of had a rougher start earlier this year.
Yeah, I think Jay's a just very level-headed, calm coach. He's not a reactive guy. And I think that translates to his players, right? As New England got run over last week, and they've been pretty up and down, haven't won on the road, and they've just quietly put in the work, stuck to the game plan, and done all of those soccer cliches, and it's paid off. And if they can keep doing that, I mean, and not just because they got a 4-0 rout last night, they look like a team that can go and beat a Montreal away 1-0 if they play like that every week, where they're switched on, they're putting in the defensive work, and they're connecting in the final third, which is something that they just haven't done. They're always going to be a team that gets chances, but they like to hold on to the ball. They've got great talent on the team, so there's really no reason why they shouldn't be able to get a few points on the road before the end of the season and maybe take that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
Do you you want to talk about the international break now?
Let's do that, because honestly, I don't think there's much to say about FC Dallas and New York Red Bulls.
Oh.
Was, despite a 2-2 draw, was like watching paint dry. And we already kind of talked about LA versus Colorado. And the one thing I want to say about LA was they really did come out and play. Like, again, they must have listened to the podcast and taken some offense. Because you sort of go, like, they played like LA is supposed to play. And they were quick. They were great triangle passing all over the pitch. Yes, they're playing Colorado. They probably should have beaten them 9-0. But they came out and put on a performance, which has got to be pleasing if you're an LA fan, thinking, oh, so, you know, the players decided they were going to turn up this week. Nice.
I noted the... their last league win was in April. A home win was on April 7th.
Yeah.
So that must feel good for them. And Gyasi Zardes finally scored.
Yeah, on his birthday as well. So.
What a present. What a gift.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's talk about the international break. You lead this, because I was sort of keeping an eye on some of the games yesterday, but I foolishly decided to watch FC Dallas versus New York Red Bulls instead of watching my home country play yesterday.
Well, that's good. It gives you the perspective on how bad that match is and how maybe we don't need to talk about it. I was... Canada played Jamaica in a rematch of this year's Gold Cup quarterfinal. I went by the press conference earlier this week, where they were talking, sort of one of the key stories was the absence after some time of Atiba Hutchinson from the squad. And I think in general, his return sort of highlights the sort of old guard and new guard transition that's currently happening, where it's kind of good he stepped in and got that armband right away. And it's kind of good to have him, in a position where he can impart some wisdom to people around him. Also, Junior Hoilett, who plays for Cardiff City, after having made his switch back, was playing in Ontario for the first time as a professional, so that was exciting. The press conference was good. They're... we're going to play some audio from Alphonso Davies, but I think the other two highlights were... people always ask Atiba Hutchinson what's going on with MLS, and he kind of said, it hasn't worked out that way yet. It's always been in the back of my head to play at the MLS at some point, preferably in my home country, but it hasn't worked out that way. Which, is that a reference to the way that he's rumored to going to Vancouver every transfer window?
Yeah. Yeah, quite possibly. I think for every Vancouver fan, we'll always say, we'll believe it when he shows up in a Whitecaps kit. It's very hard to imagine Vancouver spending that kind of money on a player that old, even if they're Atiba Hutchinson. It would shock and amaze me if they were ready to spend that. If he was 4 years younger, maybe, but when have the Whitecaps ever spent more than $1.5 million on a player?
if the level changes, it's possible that he, you know, has the ability to be more of an influence. And I really like Atibo Hutchinson. I remember he was onside. Mm-hmm. If you get that reference to the Gold Cup, there was a Gold Cup semifinal against the U.S. that fateful one.
All right. it's nothing against him. I'd love to have him, but I just think there's very few Canadian clubs that would be willing or able to spend the cash necessary to get him over anytime soon, except for Toronto. And if you're Toronto, you're just going Atiba who?
True. And then the other big discussion was Coach Octavio Zambrano is not that excited about the playing time being afforded to Canadians in the MLS.
Oh, interesting. And
it seems like they've got like a they've got somebody tracking minutes. And he said that there are very few people that are getting full 90-minute games.
Which is true.
And I feel like this has been a problem for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to make a rule change. It doesn't seem to have made that big of an impact. And I feel like their whole strategy for dealing with this is the Canadian Premier League will come and solve all our problems.
Mm.
Which, I mean, the other issue... That project, which I think deserves a deep dive at some point,
mm-hmm.
Is very interesting. There, the attempt to set up a either a second division or a parallel Canadian first division with teams around Canada is a very interesting one. I think the pursuit of it has kind of held back second division growth in Canada a little bit because. As exciting as things happening in Ottawa and Montreal, Ottawa and Edmonton are,
mm-hmm.
you get the feeling that we might have seen more NASL or USL teams in the last 5 years. If they were happier about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if they if some of those USL sides enter into MLS, which seems likely, then I'm sure there's reasons, but it would make sense to me to have like the Edmonton and Ottawa's just in the USL.
Mm-hmm.
Having seen them play, I don't feel like they're much above or much below any USL team. I mean, the way some USL teams play, they probably could go on a bit of a tear, but that's a whole other show, I feel. But let's listen to your little chat with Fonzie first, because. Who doesn't want to hear a 16-year-old talk about and respond to asinine questions about himself? Except for your questions, of course.
Yes, of course. All right, here is Alfonso Davies.
Alfonso, you had such a terrific Gold Cup. Are you looking forward to wearing the Canadian colors again?
Yeah, it's always an honor putting on the red and white jersey, playing for your country. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it after the Gold Cup. We lost to them in the quarter, so we're looking for revenge in this game. But yeah, all the boys are excited.
Junior said that it wasn't a friendly for him. Do you think that's how most of the players feel after the Gold Cup?
Yeah, definitely. After losing to them, everybody was devastated. Couldn't believe it. Came such a long way and ending it there. So most of the players, get another one. The bag kind of game. To be honest, I don't really pay attention to it. I just go on about my business, do what I do, stay focused, game in, game out. So.
What attention?
What's it like for you to transition to being in the Canada camp when you're usually in the Vancouver?
Oh, it's really easy. The boys make it really easy for me. I have players to play for Vancouver on the team as well. That makes it comfortable coming in, playing. So, yeah, it's a pretty quick transition for me.
What's it like having Atiba Hutchinson in camp this time? You know, he's playing at the highest level, won championships in Turkey, playing Champions League. I mean, he's in many ways doing the things that a lot of you players want to do.
Yeah, it's a stepping stone. Looking at Atiba, thinking, you know, we one day we can be like just like him playing Europe, playing up there with him. So. Yeah, him coming in is a big boost for the whole team. He brings a lot of experience to the team, so we're just trying to feed off him, learn from him as much as we can.
Is there anything specific that you've learned from Atiba?
No, not yet. I haven't really got the chance to talk to him yet, but I will soon, yeah.
You mentioned that you kind of look up to Atiba and you want to do the things that he's done. Do you get the sense already that there are young children that are looking up to you as well after your success at the Gold Cup?
I think so. But, yeah, I try to be a good role model like he is towards us. So, yeah, them looking up to me is it's great for me and me looking up to him. You know? So, yeah, trying to do what I do.
The spotlight was on you before Alfonso, but after the Gold Cup, a lot of people were looking for you. Has life changed? I mean, I'm sure Carl Robertson is helping you keep your feet on the ground, but walking in the streets in Vancouver, do you get recognized, or are you able to just be a normal kid away from the soccer field?
Sometimes, yeah. I just be a normal kid, you know, just do normal kids' things. But, yeah, so people recognize me. Often, but then again, I don't really get to my head. Keep focused. Keep doing what I do.
What does it mean to be a normal kid? Like, what do you do to away from the pitch to kind of get away from all of this?
I hang out with my friends, play FIFA.
Yeah.
A lot.
Who's your team?
In FIFA.
Yeah.
I don't really have one. I just use everyone.
Okay.
It depends what the other opponent is.
Are you good at FIFA?
I'll say I'm the best in camp, yes.
Okay. How much of a trip is it going to be to play as yourself in FIFA?
it'll be great playing as myself in FIFA. That's what I've been dreaming about when I was little, so it's going to be amazing.
Do you think the opportunities have changed for younger players now compared to when a player like Atiba was coming out?
Definitely. Younger players, again, more looked at these days. Coaches want to play younger players, so... being a young player and playing, so it's great because the coaches, they want to play young players. They want to, you know, build the team as young team. So that's where.
Did you learn anything from playing the Gold Cup? I think that's important. Did you learn in the Gold Cup? Did you learn anything from playing against
them? Yeah, they're really good, strong, fast team. We can't really beat them in pace because they're really fast. So we try to move the ball as much as we can, try to tire them out by passing the ball. So we learn.
Did the tackling affect you in any way? Because
they
close though.
Yeah, it was close. They tackle hard. They wanted that game. Coming in the game, we have to match their intensity as well.
Alfonso, to come back to something we were speaking about earlier, I'm sure you're aware when Vince Carter was playing basketball here in Toronto, there was a generation of Toronto-born basketball players that came after him and looked to him as an influence. Do you perhaps see yourself as someone like that can create a generation of Canadian players that look up to you and say, if he can do it, if he can get to these high levels, I can as well?
Definitely. I think it's the mindset of the player. If they think they can do it, then you can achieve anything. So I'm glad I can be a role model for the young players coming up playing soccer, and they're looking up to me. It's great.
It feels like cautious do you feel like you can handle
it? Yeah, I'm sort of okay with the current amount of work I'm getting right now. They're not really trying to put too much pressure on me and trying to make me tired or fatigued. So yeah.
And so this is a big rematch against Jamaica. Is this the sort of team that you feel as Canada can get used to? It's a team that Canada needs to be involved in.
Yeah, definitely. With the Tebow coming in, I think he's a really big part of this team. He can really help us defeat them this time around. So, yeah, it's a big milestone for us. I think if we keep developing, we can be able to beat them on a regular basis.
Is this Fonzie nickname a thing?
Yeah.
Will you be watching any of the other CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers to kind of gauge that far as well to see what you as a squad need to get to?
Yeah, definitely. I like watching soccer. I think I'll be watching some of the qualifiers to see how we compare to the rest of the world.
Again, just to come back again, we were talking about role models a few years ago. 3-4 years ago, was there a particular role model that you had?
Yeah.
As a player?
Messi.
Yeah.
I really look up to him.
He's good.
I heard that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look up to him. He was my role model growing up. He's still my role model now. So.
What is it about him?
Just the way he carries himself on and off the field. His ability to play the game. Walk past defenders like they're not even there. So. It's really great to watch, to see.
Players that have this Champions
Last
League...
Last question, okay, guys. Yeah. We have to get Junior.
That have this Champions League experience, do you ever get the chance to talk to them? And what is the most... just about sort of what they've learned over the course of their career, what's the most important thing you think you've got from them?
I think Atiba is the first Champions League player I've talked to so far. So, he just told me I play a game. Every game, play like it's your last, so... That's what I try to do each and every time I step on the field.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You.
So what did you think of that?
Well, kudos for getting the last question in. okay. You know, it's a 16-year-old's response to questions. A lot of them kind of saccharine questions around what's it like to be Alfonso Davies and... Do you think you're a role model? Like sort of questions that you would expect being asked to some sort of like young pop star of the same age. But, you know, impressed with the way he conducted himself. But it's kind of interesting listening to all that and then knowing also he was sent off late in the game on a challenge that there doesn't seem to be any really good replays of. I can't really see what happened or why it was a red.
I just had a look at it now. We can get to that in a moment when we talk about the game action. I was curious your thoughts as to as we heard in the interview, the Whitecaps have had a handle on sort of Davies' media exposure a lot more last year than this year.
Yeah.
But everything is moving very quickly, and you kind of get the sense that when Davies shows up at the senior team level, everybody's crowding around to get a glimpse. Now that we're starting to see him on a larger stage.
Yeah. If he continues to play the way that he plays, or has been playing rather, it's only going to increase, and Robinson, the whole Whitecaps organization knows that. There's only so much they can do to protect him. I think they've done a good job so far of managing that. Part of that is through managing his minutes, which I know has a lot more to do with the fact that they don't want to fatigue him, as he mentioned. Like, they need to use him somewhat, not sparingly, but they just need to be careful with his minutes. He can't go play 90 minutes even every week. He's not, even if it feels like he's at that level, he's still got a lot of growing to do. And I think it's easy to forget. Like, he's 16. His body is literally still growing. He's going to get taller. He's going to get faster. But not if he's given minutes of, you know, the full 90 every week. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it really does feel like just a question of when rather than if. Is there some sort of MLS rule that you can't be traded internationally before 18 or something like that? Is that right?
Oh, that's an interesting point. I feel like maybe that would make sense, their transfer system not being accustomed to that sort of interest.
Yeah. Because I feel like people keep talking about it, of like, oh, there's all these clubs that have interest, and I keep going like, I'm pretty sure he can't be traded before he's 18 to an international club.
I don't think that Vancouver doesn't know that that's going to happen eventually.
Of course.
I think that it's kind of telling. There was the Vince Carter question. Mm-hmm. About, you know, do you think you can, which is a crazy thing to ask a 16-year-old. Like, I know it's probably based in an angle. Like, it's
yeah.
that the reporter obviously was talking more, but it seems on its face, it seems like a really tough question to answer. But I think that we're still at the point where players are being influenced globally. Like, mm-hmm. you could tell that Davies' favorite player growing up was not Adiba Hutchinson, but it was Messi.
Yeah.
Because that's how the global soccer wheel turns.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell at least a little bit that there are, you know, some thoughts towards the next step or at least some eyes.
Yeah, of course. I mean, how could there not be? Davies is very good at just sort of being humble and sticking to his, you know, I'm just 16, I'm just going to play my game and continue to do what I do here. Of course he's got his eye too. And I'm sure his agent is chirping in his ear as well about the possibilities. But, you know, I think people forget too is it's, he's, of course he's ready for the next level. But he still has a lot of learning to do. In 2 years' time, when he is 18, and if that rule does exist in MLS, I'll need to go do some research on that. People forget that it is a very different level. And for every Alphonso Davies in Canada, when you go over to Europe, there's a lot of Alphonso Davies. There's a lot of 16-year-old kids who can play, who are fast, who are physical. Yes, Canada and North American leagues, I think, produce a different type of player that is a little bit more physical. We saw that when Dempsey was playing over in England, that, you know, he had success there, I think, largely because of his size and his physical play. But it is a different level, and I think people need to sort of manage their own expectations of... I personally don't think Davies is going to go to a team like Liverpool, who have showed interest in him, apparently, and go be a starting player in the next 5 years. I'd love him to prove me wrong on that. I see him more likely going to a mid-level English or European side and getting some minutes and impressing, but actually having to put in a lot of work to climb and earn his spot on those teams that are going to have other players who can play just as well and better than he can. We see the talent rise to the top in a league like MLS, in a league that's still growing. And we see that with Jackson Hamel. We see that with Russell Tybert. But it's a different story when you put them in a player in a player base where there's more peers who are actually at their level.
I think you're very right that there's still a lot of growth to come for Davies. And I think that's part of why it's hard to imagine him at the European level, because the Davies that we see going over there is not going to be the Davies that we see now.
No.
if you even think, and I think of, you know, some of the past teenage Whitecaps stars like Darren Maddox and Kakuta Mane, just the ways that they evolved over their times at the club. It'll be exciting to see what the end product is, but we haven't even seen his final form.
No. And that's the big unknown thing. As exciting as it is, I think I take the Robbo approach of kind of being like, yeah, he's a fantastic talent. He's got a lot to learn, though. His finishing isn't great. He still needs to improve his defensive side. He's willing to put in the effort, but his defensive game's not great. And these are all things that European clubs, they need out of players. They don't just need a pacey winger who's strong and can dribble through defenders. They need, that's also doesn't necessarily suit the style of a lot of those English clubs, right? Is you might be standing on the wing holding up the ball for 60, 70 minutes before you finally get your chance to break. And you're also facing defenders who know how to deal with a pacey young forward or a pacey young winger. I hope that's what we get to see, because I'm fascinated to see it. I think the closest we've seen is Alphonso Davies playing against Crystal Palace, but we won't go there.
I think that it also shows like a difference in audiences, because I think that Whitecaps fans have got to see a lot more game footage of Davies, basically. The ins and outs, the week to week is more evident the fact that although he has scored goals in a Whitecaps shirt, none of them have come in the league yet, is clear. And I think that when you switch to an audience like the Canadian men's national team audience that saw him, I think, win or share for the Golden Boot. He had like two or three goals, mm-hmm. which was enough for mm-hmm. it. That's obviously an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
But it isn't always, it isn't necessarily reflective of a whole season of Davies.
No. And it is a different angle to looking at for sure.
Mm-hmm. I wrote a column earlier this year about how he kind of defies the usual accountability almost structure of people analyzing soccer and soccer players, in that you really can't demand anything of him yet because he's so young.
Yeah.
Which brings us to his 6-minute stint on the pitch in the match itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I saw when I was looking at it, I think so they have a tumble on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and I think that they're rolling around end to end with their legs together, and I think his leg kicks out, I think, and catches the defender.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was able to see in the highlight I just looked at, but they very clearly did not run the slow motion. You'd think that the slow motion clip back, you'd think that they would do it now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there just wasn't, I mean, I think there's got to be some better angle of it, but I kind of went, the referee must have seen something that's not evident in that clip.
Yeah.
The one thing I can say is we know that as level-headed as Alphonso Davies can be off the pitch, he's shown that he can get frustrated. He's shown that he can be a little hot-headed at times on the pitch. So it's not within... it's definitely within possibility that the Wunderkind had a little bit of a flare-up, lashed out with the boot. Referee saw it. The video that I've seen isn't super conclusive, but I actually probably will get disowned by many Canadians for saying this, but I think I'd probably side with the referee that, you know, if he saw something, he's 16, right? He's gonna lose his cool from time to time.
The best thing to say about that is it did come in just 6 minutes after. People were expecting some explosive display from Alphonso Davies in 6 minutes, and it did come.
Yeah.
The game at this point, I think that I was at BMO Field for it. It started very brightly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that once teams started to tinker and you started to see Jamaica had a number of substitutions in the second half. The first half was kind of where the action was if you wanted to gain a measure of revenge or measure the two teams against each other in a replay of the Gold Cup quarterfinal. The second half was more tinkering and just sort of getting a chance to look at people and see how you feel. Anthony Jackson Amel had a great opening goal.
Yeah.
Position was very good. Junior Hollett's pass, great.
And then he got the assist on the second one, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
With I felt very as well.
Yeah, I feel very vindicated about what I said about him last week, where I was like, okay, thanks for... thanks, buddy, for making me look good. And I know he's a little bit older, but for me right now, he's the sort of young Canadian player to watch. And Piet as well, yeah, another... solid performance. Did he just recently sign with Montreal, or has he been there the whole time? I thought I heard the commentator say he just signed or something.
No, he was there when I visited this spring. He signed as a homegrown player in 2014. He was there. Maybe he signed an extension.
You know what it was, because I remember I looked this up last night. Is he was loaned out to the USL side last year, so that's why we didn't hear much of him, is he was playing with the USL side. He was still playing with Montreal, but not on the first team.
Right, and what is he, 1993, I'm bad at math, what is that? It's
24?
24?
23? Something? Yeah. Oh, before we go talk to Coach Zambrano, I have to correct myself, because somebody probably caught it last week. where I very mistakenly said that Roman Torres was no longer with Seattle Sounders. I don't know why I thought that. He was just on international duty. Apparently I took that personally and wrote him off the team, but no, he super still plays for Seattle. So if there's a Toronto-Seattle rematch and it goes to penalties, Torres is in the mix to slot one home again.
International duty is kind of like object permanence. When somebody's when somebody's gone, they're just done. They never exist.
I don't know why I was like, well, that's him gone.
Osorio, Jonathan Osorio, who scored the second goal, is an interesting figure to me because it still feels there's a lot to come from him. Mm-hmm. I believe he's a player who he really appreciated in his goal celebration made you think that he was very happy to score at BMO Field for Canada, and he's from Toronto itself. Mm-hmm. I feel like he could also do more for TFC. I feel like there's more to grow for him in that squad, and maybe it's just because TFC is so loaded right now. But he's kind of like an early season Jon Snow right now, I feel.
Yeah, and
I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if that's right, but TFC fans will yell at me. But.
Yeah, when I felt the same way with the brief glimpse of Raheem Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
As well, another player that you kind of, there's a bunch of question marks hanging over him about what does he turn into. And you know, I think if you're Toronto, you're kind of looking at him going, you know, he's 22, he has an MLS goal now, I think. Mm-hmm. And is slotted in for Giovinco a couple of times. It's, you know, it's interesting knowing that we're going to hear in a second about Canadian players not getting playing time. It becomes an interesting question when you have somebody like Raheem Edwards, who you think, what would he look like? He's 22, but what would he look like if he was getting more playing time? Because what he's, with very few minutes, he seems to have made a pretty good account of himself.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not saying Toronto should be starting him over Giovinco, but you wonder.
I think he's still coming along because he was okay out on the wing. Mm-hmm. I didn't see much come from him. I think that there were some good runs, but I think that just the importance of having Junior Hoilett was my big thing that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
From sort of having him around. One worrying note. Also, I wanted to say that I was impressed by Jason Wittweiler, the goalkeeper, who I didn't know much about before.
Mm. Who does he play with?
He plays in Switzerland for Nucatel, I think.
Okay.
And he had a great save that probably kept the game in the format that it was. Certainly kept it 2-0, and I think that would have changed the 2-1 would have changed the complexion, coming as it did, I believe, just before halftime. And he had a bunch of other good saves as well.
Mm.
Worrying moment for Sam Adekubi, the Vancouver prospect who was just coming back from injury, had to come back from his loan to Brighton, or I don't know if he's had to be recalled or what. But he was on loan at Brighton and got injured and has come back and left again after 9 minutes. So really stressful that happened.
Yeah.
He tweeted, I'll be back.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's not too banged up, but
no.
I'm sure there were a lot of coaches and trainers that were.
And that's where, you know, I think it's important to remember these types of instances when we talk about the Alphonso Davies of the world, that, you know, there's some fantastic young talents but out there in the world of soccer, but the number that you don't hear about because they've been plagued by injuries, that there's really, you know, sometimes you just roll the dice and, you know, so you look at somebody like Christian Dean who goes to Chicago and finally seems to have a new lease on his playing career, and then breaks his fifth metatarsal and is going to be out for another 6 months. That's not his fault, right? It's not the trainer's fault. It just, it happens in the game of soccer. And how many young careers have been stunted or stalled because of injuries? And it's very worrying that at 22, Adekube's dealt with so much. Certainly it's stuff he can come back from. But I just think that, you know, you always need to, when you're watching these young players, keep that in the back of your mind, is that every player is, you know, one mistake, one injury away from potentially never playing again, or taking 8 months off to recuperate. So it's a strange game. Accidents happen. I don't quite know. It didn't look like a dirty tackle on Adekube or anything. It just looked like an awkward hamstring injury or something. But all you can say is it's unfortunate, and hopefully it's something that doesn't last too long.
He said, good win, super disappointed, I'll be back.
Yeah.
This was the full tweet. So
yeah,
maybe it's just a fitness issue. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right. Let's talk a little bit to Canadian men's national team coach Octavio Zambrano.
Jamaica is a team that in recent years has sort of leaned on MLS and MLS players for a lot of their time. Is that something that you want to do with Canada as well? Or would you like to see more Canadians making
I want to see Canadian players play more. It is always an issue for us when we get together and we quantify the minutes that our guys have coming into camp. And there is only a few that come with steady 90-minute performances in a week-to-week basis for, you know, the 2-3 months that we track them. Before the camp. So it's a concern. It's a concern because nothing can supplant the emotional high and the demands that a real game can give you. But we can't just say, oh, that's too bad. We have to affect that. And in as much as we can do it in a short camp, we do. Hopefully, some of these guys that don't get too much playing time, and we were just talking about Toronto being one of those, actually, that they play sporadically, that they use this time to really showcase themselves and perhaps, you know, make people think about that they need more playing time. I know this happened with Marcel de Jong. This happened with Sammy Piet. Both players now, they went back and they found themselves in a much better environment because of the Gold Cup. So this is good.
I recall a limited change to the rules in domestic eligibility over the offseason. Has that had an impact, or do you think there's more needs to be done?
Yeah, I think, you know, the MLS is going to have to obviously do strategically something to account for the incoming of the CPL. It's a given. And that bodes well for Canadian players, because I always thought it was kind of odd that, you know, Canadian players were considered foreigners, you know, playing in Canada. So, but, you know, I'm not going to get into the details of the reasons behind it and whatnot, but I think that right now the fact that the CPL is looming, then they're going to have to strategize to make sure that they keep this Canadian talent in, because there is some Canadian talent worth keeping in the MLS. Otherwise, you know, these players will be going to the CPL, and that's also good for the CPL. So these dynamics at play right now are, I think, good for Canada in general.
So that was a brief brief sort of musings on MLS and Canadian players.
Interesting.
Can we see more?
Yeah, and you know, I know Zambrano's I would say a controversial figure, but he doesn't seem particularly well-liked amongst Canadian soccer fans. But I think the one thing I can certainly say about that is, I mean, he's not wrong.
Mm-hmm. I think Canadian fans have seen so many coaches come in and say, you know, we're going to turn this thing around, that it'll take some results. I think the players that have come in have been good. But he's definitely onto something with this issue. I did look it up. The rule change was that if you were in an academy in the year you turned 16 and you sign your first contract in the MLS, you count as a domestic player now, as a Canadian.
Right.
So that's for the Whitecaps, that's Tybert, Davies, Bustos, and Carducci.
Mm.
Carducci moved on, but that was the report I remember from the province from last year.
Yeah. At the same time, like I understand it from the MLS coaches side of things, because certainly Vancouver fans are like this and kind of a fickle bunch, is they want to see the big name signings. And so you've got to balance, how do you build the league, build the fan base, bring in some known entities while also satisfying the need and the desire to develop young Canadian talent. And to me, Russell Tybert is a perfect example of this. You know, I don't think it's unfair where he's at in terms of the pecking order within the Whitecaps team.
Yeah.
And now he's been given a chance where with Laba out, and if Tony Chani keeps picking up stupid red cards, then he'll have even more. Mm-hmm. And part of me, I think, feels like, okay, what does Tybert have to do to earn his place? And the answer is he's just got to be a little bit better. He's got to be better than the guys in front of him. But it would be, to me, a great tragedy if Tybert ends up going somewhere else or moving down a league, which we've seen happen, because that's just the level he's at. I'm not saying he should be given something he hasn't earned, but he also needs the minutes to try to earn it, right? And we've seen so little of him this year. You know, in the past couple of years, he's had a few little injury knocks here and there, but you really do go, like, I want to see Russell Tybert play 90 minutes for a month and see what kind of player he is. But as it stands, we've seen him, you know, outside of the Canadian Championship and CONCACAF, we've only really seen a few looks at him for 60 minutes or so. And it's hard to develop a player with those few minutes. It's interesting because for totally unrelated reasons other than soccer, I was talking to Jay Demerit about Russell Tybert. And he had mentioned, you know, like, I go for coffee with a kid like every week and, you know, we talk about developing his game and things like that. And he sort of said, you know, you've got to be something different from what's already there. There already is a Matias Laba, which of course now there isn't for the foreseeable future, that Russell Tybert loves to just chase players down. Anyway, I'm going on too much about Russell Tybert, but it makes me wonder what can be done, I guess, is a better way of summarizing this up. Like, what can be done to improve what Zambrano's talking about?
I think that you're absolutely right about the balance. I mean, we talk about how good it is that TFC have added a player like Victor Vazquez to their midfield and striking setup. And then you look at Jonathan Osorio's minutes, and it hasn't helped.
Yeah.
In that he was a 90-minute-a-game player. I'm not saying that it's a one-to-one he was replaced by Vazquez, but it's been a much rougher year this year than last year. I think that a couple of years ago, it was certainly when the Whitecaps came in the league, it was a perception issue for sure.
Yeah.
And I think we are also, there's also an impact in the lack of kind of a robust second division where players can go to get these minutes, because you see great Whitecaps residency teams, you see Whitecaps too doing relatively well. But there isn't that ability to loan someone out and give somebody a chance to make that excursion outside of the system and try to prove themselves to a new audience and then come back and bring what they've learned.
No, and when they've done it, it really has kind of felt like, you know, they sent Hurtado on loan. They sent, obviously, Adekube's had the two stints in England, or was he in Sweden now or something? Or it was? Anyway. You're right.
Like, he might have had to have been recalled.
Yeah, but they go away. They definitely gain something from it. I think Adekube's probably had the most successful loan, unfortunately, for him and his new injury. But they're going to go to a side where they may not see a lot of minutes anyway. And yeah, they're training in a better environment. But as Zambrano said, like, nothing beats the game time. And he's right. You know, these players need to be playing more minutes in MLS in order to improve this national team.
Mm-hmm. The academy thing is the right approach. I think that the thing that you balance is that younger players need more minutes. But also older players generally aren't identified. Like,
yeah.
If you have a player that is not already on the radar of an MLS team at 22, 23, mm-hmm. of course, this is not true for everyone. And this is sort of going to be sort of an issue with the idea of the Canadian Premier League as a way of developing national team talent.
Yeah.
It's like what you want is to make more opportunities for people to have careers playing soccer and to have like a more robust ecosystem where people can go if they can't necessarily fit into MLS.
Yeah.
I don't know that creates elite level spots in the national team, players for the national team.
No.
But it's still necessary, and it's still necessary for people to be able to make money and make a living. But
absolutely,
and that means if there's more promise, more players try, which means you get more of the elite players. But I think more focus on the academy is the frustratingly slow but right way to go still.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, I can only speak to the Whitecaps Academy, really, but, I mean, I know Toronto and Montreal have had success with theirs, and all three clubs are set up fairly similar on a European academy-style model.
Mm-hmm.
You would hope that the Whitecaps TFC Impact in 5 years are going to have 5-6 regular players that are Canadians. It's frustrating right now to not have that and to be thinking that, you know, Alphonso Davies is just the beginning. I mean, he's really one of the first real academy products that's come out, and we know he's going to be a regular presence within the Whitecaps Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Russell Tybert can do the same for himself, but I feel like his numbers coming up soon to move on and prove himself elsewhere, because he just may not get his chance at the Whitecaps. But to me, you know, it's where I kind of always have an eye to watching some of those USL games, because you think, okay, Caden Cheung, I think, just turned 16. There's a handful of other players on that team that they're not there yet, but you know, what are they going to look like when they're 20 years old? Maybe they're the ones who are starting for the MLS sides.
For sure. One more point I wanted to make about Canada before we rolled away. We were talking about an air of disappointment around Orlando City earlier.
Yeah.
Boy, Kyle Aaron didn't look good.
No.
He didn't do anything bad. He just was... He was brought on at halftime for Jackson Hamel, and he just didn't... Nothing really came of it. I saw him mostly, you know, standing around and waiting for the chance to come.
Which, if I'm being honest, beyond a few moments with Orlando where he's had some productive months in front of goal, that's kind of his style of play. And I don't know if it's just a style of play thing or if it's an attitude thing. Maybe the travel from Orlando affected him somewhat, but to me, overall, I just haven't been overly impressed with him. And he's a player that I can't quite get what all the hype is about, because we've yet to really see him fully switch it on and consistently deliver the performances that we know he can put out. But what makes a great player is a player who can do that week in, week out. And you know, he's had some personal troubles recently, but it just seems like he's not fully switched on.
Well, I mean, like, he could be a really exciting player, and to have an exciting player that is a goal scorer is really something that I think Canadian fans are always looking for and are very, you know, interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that he can try and recover a little bit of form. It might be a team-wide problem in Orlando. Like, they might just need to turn... they might be somebody that might consider a coaching change or a player change to make it less glum around there.
Quite possibly. I mean, I think that's what they were trying to do with the Dom Dwyer trade. But to me, that's the interesting thing now, is that that's got to be some signal of intention when you bring in, for that much money, mid-season, or, well, I guess final third of the season, to bring in Dom Dwyer when you have Kyle Larin. To me, that's sending some kind of message.
Yeah.
And Dom Dwyer hasn't had luck yet in Orlando, but neither is anyone else on that team. But we know what Dom Dwyer is about, what he's capable of. And in terms of his attitude and his resilience through those dry spells, as he's experiencing right now, I think is much stronger and much more positive going forward than Kyle Larin's.
It'll be interesting to see more, definitely more games like this 4-0 loss will not help the mood.
No.
Certainly.
No.
But you just gotta, you definitely don't want to see somebody in a rough position, so I hope that it continues. Jason Kreis is a good coach, so I don't know exactly that you want to go. I know I was saying a coaching change. I don't know what he does to improve the situation, but
bring in some academy products, perhaps.
I think that about does it for us to this week. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I think that's good. I think we've covered it. We got a lot of mileage out of four games. Five if you include Canada. I thought this could be a 20-minute episode, but as usual, we've lots to talk about.
Also, the U.S. lost.
Yes.
There are lots of podcasts where you can hear about that.
Okay.
Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Thorntonosity on Twitter, and also now we have a Twitter account. It's just that at That's So MLS as well.
All right. You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. And also go check out the new issue of Howler Magazine coming out in September at www.whatahowler.com.
Nice. Okay. We're done.
All right. We're done. Have a great week, and don't get sent off.